The Gramsci Strategy of Cultural Marxism and the Rise of the KGB Cancel Culture. What is behind the pervasive promotion of pride and perversion? The left have said for years, don't shove your religion down my throat. And yet the left happily, literally shoves their religion down our throat. Literally. Where did this movement come from? What are its tactics and its objectives? How do we understand and resist this clear and present danger to our families, to our faith, and to our future? And you can see in pride marches, literally, goat's head, satanic symbols, pentagrams, Satan loves gays, and I am gay and I teach America's children. There's so many of these teachers' unions that are gay teachers' unions, and in some of these gay pride marches, they've literally had these posters, we will sodomize your sons. I mean, that blatant, the mentality. He who trusts in his own heart is a fool. How many of these characters talk about follow your heart, which is the mantra of how many Disney movies, follow your heart. But if you trust in your own heart, you're a fool. This business of having gay teachers grooming kids, it's got to stop. The idea of having in the classroom people who are occultic and who are promoting something quite satanic, it's playing with children's minds. For centuries, we've had the idea protecting children is one of our highest priorities, but not right now. Now, it's the idea of protecting pedophiles and sacrificing the children. Everyone who is proud in his heart is an abomination to the Lord. In fact, the whole idea of promoting pride goes against centuries of Christian tradition. Throughout the Middle Ages, pride was one of the seven deadly sins. So June is really grooming awareness month, grooming kids to be abused. Everyone knows that pornography can be used to groom people for abuse. In fact, it's known that pedophiles use pornography to groom kids and to also train people who are being human trafficked for prostitution. Pornography and prostitution are two sides of the same coin and often presents itself like a mermaid, but actually it's more like a monster underneath the surface. St. Augustine of Hippo pointed out it was pride that turned angels into devils. The first devil was actually the archangel Lucifer, who was the light bearer, and he was lifted up in his heart into pride, and therefore he got cast down to earth. Pride is sin. A high look, a proud heart, and the ploughing of the wicked is sin, we read in Proverbs 21:4. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. Psalm 10, verse 4. And Jeremiah 50, verse 31 says, behold, I'm against thee, O thou most proud, saith the Lord God of hosts. So pride is negative. I took these pictures yesterday. This is outside Woolworths at downtown in the waterfront. You know, express your own pride. And these are all pictures taken from yesterday at Woolworths. A man's pride shall bring him low. It'll not be a blessing to Woolworths or any of these banks and other companies that are promoting pride. Own, express, celebrate your pride. And with the ID being bold, sort of, I suppose, your identity. Your identity you need to be proud of. But God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble is what James 4 verse 6 says. And yet you've got churches, so-called churches, like the United Methodist Church has just abolished being a church. They officially have received themselves as embracing the whole LGBTQ agenda. And there was no debate at the United Methodist Church conference in America recently. Can you imagine? No debate. We're just adopting everything to do with LGBTQ. And that means gay priests, gay bishops, gay marriages, the whole deal. Gays running Sunday school, grooming the kids in Sunday school. Can you imagine? This is the symbol for the Episcopal Church of America. The pride of your heart has deceived you, says Obadiah 1, verse 3. In fact, there are many Episcopal congregations now in America who are seeking to come under African bishops in supervision. So you've got the Episcopal Church in America seeking African bishops in Nigeria, in Kenya, and in Uganda to be their spiritual oversight because their bishops are apostate in America. For the look on their faces bears witness against them. They proclaim their sin like Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to them. They've brought evil on themselves.
says Isaiah 3 verse 9. I mean, here's somebody dressed up like a devil saying, I bet hell is fabulous. Well, I'll bet it's not. Gay pride is actually what got Sodom fried. A haughty look, a proud heart, and a plying of the wicked are sin. And yet the White House decided to put themselves up in gay colors. This is under the Obama administration. Well, it's been pointed out that the first fireworks in honor of Pride Month were the fire and brimstone rained down on Sodom and Gomorrah. Not a very good beginning. And yet, this is what the Americans seem to think. What do they want? You can see Empire State Building, Disney Castle, the Magic Castle in Disney World, and even Niagara Falls, which is a place, by the way, where people traditionally go for honeymoons, and putting them all in gay colors, really and truly. Woe to those who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Woe to those who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and shrewd in their own sight. Isaiah 5:20. Patrick Buchanan warned a long time ago of the death of the West, how dying populations and immigrants' invasions imperil our country and civilization. Now, for decades, Europe and North America have been having a dying population. First of all, myths of overpopulation and bombard the people with propaganda, then the pill and more sterilizations and abortions and euthanasias. Well, now, the ultimate way that's going to guarantee your population will die is if you promote the gay lifestyles and transgenderism. And just in case some kids may change their mind, they are promoting gender-affirming care, which means mastectomies for healthy young girls and castrations for healthy young boys. And they call that gender-affirming care. This is sterilizing a whole generation. Now, this goes along with bombarding the kids with all kinds of propaganda. You're evil because you're white, you're evil because you're male, you're evil because you're European or German or American. And then, but there's a way out. If you want to get out from being one of the evil oppressors, you can't change your race, but you can change your gender. Now, if you change your gender, you move from being an oppressor to being the oppressed. And so here, the carrot being held, you're being beaten with a stick all the time, but you can take the carrot, change your gender, and you instantly will no longer be one of the oppressors, you'll be one of the oppressed. And so these poor guilt-manipulated kids are being confused into, in some cases, being cajoled and bullied by the teachers to having irreversible surgery that they call gender-affirming care, which, call it what is it, mutilation of kids. Suicide of a superpower. Will America survive to 2025? Patrick Buchanan was Ronald Reagan's strategist, speechwriter, and historian. He's written some brilliant books. And the point is, the United States is committing suicide. There's nothing more insane than taking 10 commands off the walls of your schools, banning prayer, kicking the Bible out of schools, legalizing abortion, booing God. Democratic Party literally took God out of their constitution. And when somebody was suggesting putting God back into the constitution, the delegates booed God in the Democratic Party convention, the DNC. We have the ANC, they have the DNC, Democratic National Convention over there. And it is suicide. But when you want to wave around the pride flags, and do you know American embassies all over the world fly the gay pride flags every June from embassies? You might recall what led to the collapse of Saigon, but I'm talking about Kabul. In Afghanistan, 2021, they were flying the gay pride flag throughout June, and then everything just fell apart in July, and the American army fled in disarray and just absolute confusion, and they left behind chaos and billions upon billions of dollars of high-tech weaponry, from helicopter gunships to tanks and armored cars, vast amount of weaponry, leaving the Taliban the best-equipped terrorist group in the world. And they've not just kept it for themselves, they've sold it on the world market to terrorists all over the world. The United States flew the gay pride flag. What do they think that's going to do in the Middle East? What do you think Muslims in Afghanistan think of a superpower like America flying a flag that just represents perversion? This is not the way to gain respect of people in the Middle East. The stated goal of the radical homosexuals is to force all of society, beginning in primary schools, to conform to sexual deviancy. At first, it started out they wanted tolerance. But tolerance wasn't enough. Once they got the tolerance, they've had tolerance for a very long time, they wanted applause. And then applause wasn't enough. Now they wanted conformity and being celebrated. And more than that, they wanted the right to go and groom and to brainwash your own kids and grandkids in school. And they want your taxpayers' money to fund it all. So forget tolerance. There's nothing to do with tolerance now. Now they're demanding that you applaud, celebrate, fund, and conform. In the words of Isaac Watts, says him, "When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on all my pride." How can we be proud when we see what our sin did to the Savior? You can't look at the cross and have any pride. All that should do is humble us and recognize that he who was the Lord of glory chose to become nothing, to empty himself and to suffer the death that we deserved on the cross. God is opposed to the proud, and we shouldn't support grooming. This is grooming of kids. And God will judge the secrets of men's hearts. To have people say, you know, God knows my heart. Well, how can that be any sense of encouragement? God knows my heart should strike terror and fear into us. Because this idea that I've got a good heart is deception. No, we don't. Jesus said, no one is good except God alone. There's nothing we've got to be proud of except the Lord Jesus and his accomplishments. Soli Deo Gloria. A good parent has to spend a lot of time defending his kids from evil thoughts, not less from the influence of the so-called gay pride lobby these days and the transgenderism. It's not just LGB, it's T and Q and plus. And T is the transgenderism. In Psalm 94, verse 16, we read, "Who will rise up for me against evildoers? Who will stand up for me against the workers of iniquity?" And today, there are very few who are willing to say marriage can only be between a man and a woman. And to say things like, there's only two genders. How about a humility month? We could really use a humility month. What about spending a month celebrating God instead of celebrating sin? Our nation could see revival in God's blessings if we had spent a month celebrating God. And if you ever feel like you're all alone, just remember, only eight people got onto the ark. Thousands of animals, but only eight people. Only four people fled Sodom and Gomorrah in time. Only David stood against Goliath. There were thousands of soldiers who could have gone to the valley, but only one, David, went. Only Elijah stood against the prophets of Baal. There were how many hundreds of them? But there was just one Elijah being true to the Lord. Only three Hebrew children refused to bow to the king's idol. Your God whom we serve, our God whom we serve is able to save us, and he will. But even if he doesn't, we still won't serve your gods, neither will we bow to your idols. Only one woman anointed Jesus' feet. Many could have, but only one did. Only one apostle went all the way to the cross of Christ, and he stood with all the women disciples. But of the men, of the 12 men apostles, only one, John, went all the way to the cross. So being a true Christian can get lonely. The narrow way is lonely, and it's rough, and it's steep. But the broad way is super easy, smooth, and downhill, and very popular. But being part of a heavenly minority is worth it in the end. Back in 2021, I was persuaded to bring out the book, The Pink Agenda, Sexual Revolution in South Africa and the Ruin of the Family. Christine McCafferty came to me with this project, and I was so negative. I was like, really, Christine, we've got enough enemies. Do we need this? And she says, yes, we do. And she showed me that from their own websites, the homosexual agenda was to legalize homosexual marriage, which in 2001, when we first brought this out, people were saying, don't be ridiculous. Nobody's talking about homosexual marriage and all that sort of thing and access to groom the kids. And we saw it coming because Christine did the research and she showed this is what's on their websites, this is what's in their manifestos, this is what's coming. And so we were ahead of the curve before Focus on the Family, before James Dobson, before anyone in the world. We brought out the first book calling out the agenda of the Pink Agenda, really 2001. And this book got banned, the first book to be banned in Nelson Mandela's New South Africa. Although it was under Mbeki, to be fair. It got banned, and we appealed and we got unbanned. But it's had an age restriction put on it. Nobody under 18 allowed, so we had to put an age restriction stickers on and things like this. And this book was so successful, we did a 4,000 print run and it was sold out so fast. We had exclusive booksellers wanting to buy it. Now, to be fair, the Gay and Lesbian Equality Project condemned it so much they were like our advertisers. And so there was a curiosity. So Evert Knursen of the Gay and Lesbian Equality Project called for the book to be banned before one copy had been released yet. And then he banned it because he was part of the Publications Control Board, and then he praised himself for banning it. So, in a talk about conflicts of interest. So we got it unbanned, and as a result, we got 100 radio and TV programs in a space of just a couple of months, all about this book. Radio, TV, national, international, super successful, because we blew the whistle and we alerted people around the world to it. Well, recently I brought out a revision, an expansion, The Rise of the Gay GB and the Pink Inquisition, which is so important because that's what we're facing right now. Have you heard of the Frankfurt School of Marxism, of cultural Marxism? How many people know what I'm talking about, the Frankfurt School? Okay, then we've got to explain what that means. So situation ethics are eroding the ethical foundations of society, but is it accidental, spontaneous, or is this planned? Humanism has obviously rejected the law of God, and instead it's vigorously promoting situation ethics. Like, is it right to sleep with your girlfriend before marriage? Well, it depends. Is it right to steal? Well, it depends. Is it right to kill someone? Well, it depends. I mean, so it depends on the situation. Situation ethics. Amorality. You put an A in front of something, it denies it. So a theist believes in God, an atheist doesn't believe in God. Morals is something you have. Amorality is no morals. Like Bill Clinton is amoral, for example. Existentialism is another word for what really matters is me, myself, and I, my personal experience now. Who cares about history? Who cares about the future? It doesn't matter about anything else. The only thing that matters is my personal experience now. That's existentialism. This is the philosophy of Hollywood. This is the philosophy of UCT and so on. Hedonism is a word for, it's not the same as heathenism, although it's overlapped somewhat. Hedonism is just live for pleasure. Eat, drink, and be merry. Wine, woman, and song. That sort of thing. That's hedonism. Pornography, well, that is the writings of prostitutes, just to take the word pornography. Homosexuality, of course, that's the whole LGBT key. Gender confusion is the transgender side of it, the T, which we see now. Transgenderism is what's promoting changing people's genders, having men in women's locker rooms, having men pretending to be women to compete in sports that they are losers at in the male sports, but they can now take away women's trophies and injure them in the process. Comprehensive sexuality education, CSE, is what the government's trying to push on us here, where right down to primary school, the government has got curriculums, like they're trying to push in a Bella Bill, which is to include CSE, to have kids as young as grade one in primary school being groomed for transgenderism, for homosexuality, and so on. Basically, pornographic abuse of children. And, of course, abortion, killing babies, sacrificing babies is part of it. So how many people know about the Gramsci strategy? Do you know who Antonio Gramsci is? Anyone? Okay. The Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism utilized the Gramsci strategy, which is also known as the Termite strategy. So the Italian Marxist, Antonio Gramsci, was the co-founder of the Italian Communist Party. And Gramsci declared that to capture the Christian West, you need to Marxize the inner man, to alter the Christian mind, turn it into its opposite in all details, so that it becomes not merely a non-Christian mind, but an anti-Christian mind. So Antonio Gramsci was part of the Frankfurt School. After the Bolshevik Revolution, a group of Western Marxists got together in Frankfurt, and they discussed how can we replicate the Bolshevik Revolution in Western Europe. And the conclusion was, we cannot. Lenin got lucky, super lucky. The correlation of forces of the First World War and the fall of the Romanov dynasty was a once-off phenomenon that's not going to happen again. We've got zero chance of organizing a Bolshevik-type revolution in Germany or in London or anything like that. Europe is too Christian. The only way to bring about communism in Europe is to destroy Christianity. Christianity is the main obstacle to a Bolshevik revolution in the West. This meant getting individualists to think about life's problems no longer with any reference to Christianity and laws of God. So Gramsci advocated a quiet revolution. Everything must be done in the name of man's dignity and his rights. in name of his autonomy and freedom from outside restraints, freedom from the claims of Christianity and from the restraints of Christianity above all. And so the Gramsci strategy he introduced as the idea of you've got to capture the culture. Capture the culture. And this is seen by people like Richard Dawkins. There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life. Don't even have the courage to say there's definitely no God. There's probably no God. That's the best you could come out with. So the Frankfurt School of Marxism included people like Professor Herbert Marcuse. Now Herbert Marcuse says, in our war against the bourgeois in the West, we must take over the plays and the arts to celebrate ugliness and meaninglessness and to get away from this everything has meaning and purpose and what you sow is what you reap. And we've got to use foul language, vulgarity, crude talk as part of verbal grenades to hurl at the bourgeois. I said, we've got to get this into the plays and into the arts and into fashions and into every area of life, right down to, of course, they wouldn't have thought of bumper stickers yet, but right down to foul language coming into T-shirts and bumper stickers and memes on. But Herbert Marcuse was, when people asked Hillary Clinton when she was running for presidency, who's your mentor? And she said, Herbert Marcuse. And Bill Clinton, when he's running for the presidency, and they said, who do you most respect? Who's been your mentor? And he said, Antonio Gramsci. So these are the Frankfurt School of Marxism, which includes George Lucas. Not to confuse with the other George Lucas who does the Star Wars franchise, but this is another George Lucas with the L-U-K-A-C-S. And Herbert Marcuse, these people are some of the Frankfurt School of Marxism. We must organize the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink. Only then, when they've corrupted all its values and made life impossible, can we impose the dictatorship of the proletariat. So these are the Frankfurt School of Marxism, Western Europe's finest minds, so to speak, almost corrupted minds of communism, who were in 1920s in the Weimar Republic of Germany cooking up revolution in the West, which was not going to be violent revolution like what they had in Russia that brought about the Soviet Union. This is going to be a long march to the cultural institutions of the West. So Antonio Gramsci put together the termite strategy. We have to eat out the heart of every pillar of Western civilization. And the entire edifice rots and collapses. So you know termites? If you haven't seen them, just go out into the bush areas. We see termite mounds, such as in Southwest Africa, Namibia, you get these huge termite mounds. And the moment you build a mud hut or a thatched roof, you can be sure the termites are busy. You lie under a thatched roof and you can feel all day and night the bits and pieces falling on your face. It's not just bits of dust. It's as the termites eating through the thatch, what falls off on the side of their mouth falls down you. And you think it's dust, but it's a termite eating out your roof. And of course, they're not just busy with the thatch, they're busy with the wood as well. That's where you've got to treat the wood. But they eat the heart out of every pillar of Western civilization. This is the goal of the termite strategy. Until the entire edifice rots and collapses. This is what the cultural Marxists want you to think is normal, natural, and healthy. Perfectly normal, natural, having men walking around in this kind of bizarre way. And of course, multiculturalism is part of it. They want to get rid of the homogeneity and the cohesion of any country, break the whole society down. To sideline Christianity is the main goal. Deal with issues without reference to the Bible. So think, for example, of who is this famous American actor who had a show where he behaved so well, turned out he is a groomer and a racial, he is a... Bill Cosby. So the Bill Cosby show, a nice, intact family where they never pray, they never read the Bible, they never go to church, and they solve all their problems without reference to God. Everything's solved just because they, you know, secular humanists in every way. And that's a classic case of the Gramsci strategy. Critical theory, you can call it too. Their goal, the secularization of society. You don't need God, you don't need Christianity, you don't need religion. Drop it in the trash can. Literally, that's their philosophy. Destroy Christianity. Going to hell and proud. That's a classic case of the results of the Gramsci strategy. Getting people to make a joke about God's eternal judgment and getting people to popularize secularism. If Jesus returns, kill him again. UndoJesus.org. A t-shirt, dump Christianity in trash can. In fact, I've even heard some of these people saying, if Jesus comes again, we're going to kill him and cremate him so that he can't rise again from dead. I mean, how's that for a stupid comment, just for starters? The Lord's not restricted by things like, if you die in a plane crash and incinerated, the Lord can still raise your body. If you're eaten by a shark, he can raise your body. Nothing could keep the Lord down, no matter what they're trying. But this is the mentality of some people. Can you imagine how foolish people can be? Here you've got the Apostle John, who was the Lord's best friend on earth. He could rest his head on the Lord's chest during the Last Supper. But when he saw the risen Christ, John fell on his face like a dead man. Because even for John, who was Jesus' best friend on earth, to see the Lord in the risen glory, he fell on his face like a dead man. Do you think any of these atheistic creeps are going to be back-chatting God on the Day of Judgment? They are going to be pleading for the mountains to fall him. They'd prefer to be buried under an avalanche than to face the wrath of the Lamb. But you've been lied to about everything, and it's the Frankfurt School of Marxism. I should say the Frankfurt School of Marxism were chased out of Germany when the National Socialists took power, but they didn't disappear. They moved to Columbia University, to Harvard University, to Hollywood, and they took over. And they've been corrupting America ever since the 1930s. So that's the Gramsci strategy. Now, why do I speak about the KGB? You know who the KGB are? I've actually got a KGB badge in our display cabinet here, a real one, not a replica, that was captured in the field in Angola. Now, the Soviet Union's secret police, the KGB, which started as the Cheka, became the NKVD, they became the KGB. They were vicious, persecutive Christians. Anyone who opposed communism, the KGB went after them. Many millions of Christians were investigated by the KGB, interrogated, tortured, imprisoned, murdered, for failing to comply with the political party orders, for failing to pay homage to the dictator of the Soviet Union at the time. For example, poor Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he got locked up for, even though he's a hero of the Red Army, he is an officer in artillery, and Alexander Solzhenitsyn had impeccable track record, but in a private letter, he referred to the dictator, Joseph Stalin, as the moustached one, which was deemed not respectful enough. So he got 10 years in the gulag, in the concentration camps for that. 50 million Russian people were sent to freeze or starve to death, be worked to death, in the 1,800 gulag concentration camps, many of which were in Siberia, in the Arctic hellholes. And think of the 50 million odd people sent for survival training in Siberia, basically, and starved. When I speak about the Gulag, it was an archipelago. It's like a whole mess of islands. 1,800 concentration camps, death camps, where enemies of the Soviet Union were sent, laboring up in the Arctic Circle in many cases. You know, we can get 6 months night and 6 months day. Imagine 6 months without seeing the sun. Not to mention freezing, freezing, freezing cold. Absolutely beyond mind-numbing freezing. Like minus 40 degrees and all that sort of thing. Horrific conditions. Now, the KGB also used active measures and disinformation to discredit their critics and to undermine enemies of the Soviet state. As John Calvin said, the greatest injury that can be done to any man is to ruin his reputation. So slander, gossip, disinformation is a very important part of the tactics. It's not, some people might rip their fingernails out and their toenails out and torture them, waterboard them and so on. Some they might behead or crucify and so on, but then others that just ruin their reputation. Today, homosexual activist bullies, the KGB I call them, are the residing KGB of the West. They're a force of radical homosexuals and transsexuals whose aim seems to be to desensitize, intimidate, silence, and prosecute Christians for any politically incorrect beliefs on marriage and morality in particular. And around the world, have you noticed there's only one country in Africa that has legalized homosexual marriage? And that's sadly our own country of South Africa, which used to be one of the most conservative countries in the world. By the way, when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, the British Times, the Times of London, had an op-ed, which I was fascinated to read, which says, feel sorry for poor Nelson Mandela. The real problem that he's facing is not apartheid. That's mostly dead anyway. The real problem is Calvinism. South Africa is the most Calvinist country in the world. The real fight that Nelson Mandela has is to destroy Calvinism in its heartland of South Africa. In fact, at that time, somebody wrote also there that if John Calvin came back to the world today, he'd feel most at home in South Africa. They've even got a town called Calvinia, and it's the one country in the world at that stage in the 80s that still had Sabbath protection laws, where all shops, cinemas, places of entertainment were closed down on Sunday under the Sabbath protection laws. And John Calvin would probably be the happiest in South Africa. These are all the observations of the English Times of London. And the real fight of the ANC is to destroy Calvinism in its heartland. All over the world, Christians are being targeted, bullied, prosecuted for believing what the Bible teaches about the institution of marriage, which, bear in mind, was started by God himself, so he can set the boundaries for it, and for sexuality and a family. So we now have a new inquisition. And there's all kinds of serious cases of Christians being discriminated against or charges laid against them in South Africa. Like, we've had people here who were doing counseling for people who came to them needing conversion therapy, which now is banned in England, by the way. We've had people who came, you know, if you're homosexual and you disturb your mind, you go for counseling. And we had some Christian counseling schools where they would actually help you to break free. They got prosecuted. There's bed and breakfast and Worcester and so on, where homosexuals chose, of all the hundreds of bed and breakfasts they could choose, they wanted the Christian one, the one with bread of life, the scripture verse on the wall. They wanted to go there, and then took these people to court when they recommended another B&B down the road because they were Christians and they didn't do that. Sweden, they locked up a pastor for preaching what Romans 1 says, even though he said you've got to love homosexuals and show them respect, but he described homosexuality as an abomination before God. And the pastor, Acker Green, who's in his 70s, got arrested and sentenced to jail for what he preached on the pulpit. Germany, all kinds of things happen. United Kingdom, we've had pastors beaten up for preaching against sin, all sin, in Hyde Park, and the police standing back doing nothing, and then not arresting the people who assaulted the old man in the 70s with grey hair, but arresting the senior citizen who had read what the Bible says. America, you've had all kinds of bizarre things. Canada's one of the most hostile when it comes to anybody who commits a thought crime. And they harass, prosecute anyone who expresses their thoughts and their beliefs about homosexuality that isn't groveling and repeating the mantras. So support your local gay GB thought police. We design thought police. Closed minds stop thought crimes. Report those who think for themselves or who quote from the Bible. So the gay GB. Now, to understand the thought crimes, you've got to know 1984. Who here has read 1984, the book? Okay, good. I mean, some people know that one. So, ignorance is strength. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. George Orwell was once a British policeman in Burma. He was a communist, and he served throughout the Second World War as a propagandist for the BBC. And by the way, he said he modeled mini-truth or Ministry of Truth on the BBC. And you would notice, when I first read 1984, it was a school textbook in Rhodesia. So we were required to study 1984 as a school textbook, which is very interesting. Well, I thought this is a book exposing Joseph Stalin and the Soviet Union. But then why did George Orwell base it in London, in England? Airstrip One, as he called it. And why did he base mini-truth on the BBC? Not on Pravda, not on Izvestia, based in the BBC. And I think many people forget the fact he was warning the West about these dangers. This isn't just exposing this, what happens in the East. Football, beer, and above all, gambling filled the horizon of their minds. To keep them in control was not difficult. George Orwell tried to communicate to people, so he came up with this brilliant idea of Animal Farm. Animal Farm was also a textbook that we had to study in school in Rhodesia, a lot more meaningful than the nonsense they give you today. Now the poor kids are getting English assignments such as reading Harry Potter. And assignments in English, write out a spell to put a curse on somebody. And what animal would you like to shapeshift into? And one of the English classes plan a bank robbery. You know, we don't have enough bank robbers in South Africa. Plan a bank robbery. What vehicle will you use for getaways? What weapons will you use? This is an English assignment out in Gauteng. Animal Farm is pretty original and brilliant. It basically depicts the animals in rebellion against the farmer and the politicians as pigs. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And the geese and so on and ducks are walking around chanting, four legs good, two legs bad, four legs good, two legs bad. So they started up with seven commandments and ended up with only five. Whatever goes on two legs is an enemy. Well, because the pigs start to walk on their hind legs, they abolished that one. Whatever goes on four legs or has wings is a friend, and that got abolished. No animal shall wear clothes. They crossed that one off too. Four legs good, two legs bad, end up two legs better. No animal shall sleep in a bed, later the pigs added with sheets. No animal shall drink alcohol, and later the pigs added to excess. No animal shall kill any other animal, and then later was added without cause. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And Animal Farm is a brilliant insight to how communism works. And when I met a whole lot of people who'd been in Angola in the communist concentration camps, they were all ex-communists, and I was having a supper with them. And their favorite book, Animal Farm, and they're also like 1984. Well, 1984, Big Brother is watching you. Make this pledge. War is peace. Freedom is a slavery is freedom. Ignorance is strength. So George Orwell says, political language is designed to make lies seem truthful and murder sound respectable. Just think of how they can use terms like technical incursion. It's not an invasion. Going into North Korea was a technical incursion. And then it wasn't a war, it was a police action. And then it wasn't terror bombings of civilian centers, it was collateral damage, saturation bombing, or strategic bombing, or area bombardment, and so on. And it's not an abortion, it's a termination of pregnancy. They're not killing the baby, they're just removing the product of conception. And there are all these nice little euphemisms. Well, George Orwell concluded his book, 1984, saying, every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book rewritten, every picture has been repainted, every statue, every street building has been renamed, every date has been altered, and the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. George Orwell wrote, not George Orwell, Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote the book, We Never Make Mistakes. And that's the slogan of the Communist Party in Soviet Union. We never make mistakes. And you know, of course, he really exposes that, but that's the mentality. And truth is now the new hate speech. Political correctness is destroying the very fabric of society. Never before in history have people been so afraid to stand up against absurdity for fear of being labeled a racist or a homophobe or a bigot or a transphobic bigot. Getting rid of political correctness is what we need to do. We've got to get people talking again. I mean, you could stand up and say, there's only two genders. Marriage can only be between a man and a woman. Men do not belong in women's sports. Make women's sports female again. I mean, those are thought crimes. You can get into deep trouble for saying any of that. And those people say, I don't want to get involved in politics or in controversial matters. Well, the price of apathy towards public affairs is to be ruled by evil people. Plato said that 2,400 years ago. So when you have a person saying, I'm not interested in politics, you need to say to them, well, politics is very interested in you. And when you say I'm not interested in politics, you're saying, I don't mind what the government does with my money, my property, my life, my children, my grandchildren, because politics is going to determine all sorts of things, right down to whether you're allowed to breathe air and oxygen, whether you've got to wear some face diaper, whether you're allowed to run around an empty field. I mean, they were interfering in every people's life, and then an untested chemical substance, a DNA-altering a drug could be put into your body without your choice. You have to have it if you want to travel. You've got to do it if you want to keep your job. And to think the state could determine right down to the level of how you respond to medicine, which normally was a person's choice, now they could force it. So I'm not interested in politics. It's about one of the dumbest things anyone can say, because politics is super interested in you and your money. Well, the Marxists, starting with Antonio Gramsci identified five primary culture-carrying, culture-transforming institutions which need to be infiltrated and subverted. And the five areas are education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, political institutions. These are the five areas that communists seek to infiltrate and subvert and to hijack, transform, to change society. And education is key. That's the thumb. Popular schooling should be placed under the control of the great workers' unions. The problem of education is the most important class problem. Karl Marx said, the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. Well, Antonio Gramsci said is the schools are the most important places for communists to infiltrate. And entertainment. Everyone's influenced by entertainment. Now, we're not just talking about Hollywood. It's also the plays, the festivals that are done. I mean, from Nicker Milan, Artscape on, it's all important. News media is seriously important. And right now, you know, there's six people in America who control all the media in America. Six individuals. The mass media is dominated by communists. Now, you know, there's junk food for your body and there's junk and garbage for your mind as well in the media. And so if you think of some of the most unhealthy so-called food, junk food or non-food out there in society, CNN and BBC and so on is worse than that for your mind. If you want to neutralize your brain and get your brain fat and flabby and thoughtless and stupid, then watch the Clinton News Network or the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation or SATV, which is the voice of the ANC, or any of these other mindless groups. Now, here you can see how so many companies and corporations are actually controlled by a very few major entities. And this is just talking about how a lot of capitalism today is nothing other than a kind of monopoly control. And the media, six major houses control all the media in the United States of America. And in South Africa, I think it's just two. We've got the Argus Group, and we've got the the National Press, basically. So you've got two groups that control all the media in the country. Now, just an example of how news media can distort things. Do you remember after the Charlie Hebdo massacre in France, we had millions of people marching in Paris to protest the killing of these journalists? Now, these are blasphemous journalists who were often very anti-Christian, but then they stepped over the line. They made jokes about Muhammad, and that just was too far. And so you had 26 heads of state led millions of protesters in Paris to protest against this. And I mean, there in the front row, you can see the president of France that time, François Mitterrand. You got Angela Merkel, Benjamin Netanyahu. I looked at this picture, I thought, this must have been a nightmare for the security. How could the security services for these heads of state protect them at the heads of millions of people in the streets? Well, you just need to see behind the photo. It was a small group, and you can see the security guys around the outer edge. This is a selected hand-picked group of people who've been previously screened. This is maybe millions did march in Paris, I don't know. But they weren't at the head of the millions of people. They were doing their own photo op behind the scenes in some side street. And they're probably snipers on the rooftops and, you know, total utter fraud. You can fool all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of them all the time, but you can fool enough of them to rule a large country. Now, look at this picture. Remember when Barack Hussein Obama visited Tanzania? Here he is, and look, the cameraman is crouching down, the two cameramen, to give a picture, an impression like in the previous pictures. Here's President Obama, so popular and so unconcerned and brave. He's walking in the middle of a crowd of people, shaking hands all over the place. You know, how great is that? But look, they're all wearing the same clothes, all wearing the same hat, they're all carrying the same types of flags, Tanzanian flags, American flags, and behind them are all the security. This is a completely screened, selected group. This is how easy it is to fool the people. The news media can give you a completely different perspective simply by a different angle with the camera and the perspective's been given. But here you've got someone ruining the whole image by getting a picture from above. Well, of course, religious institutions are infiltrated too. And we've got fake ministers, we've got false shepherds, false prophets all over the place as well. And of course, the political institutions are the easiest to hijack, because once you've got the education, entertainment, and news media, well, all the religious and political people have to pass through there, so those culture-carrying institutions will guarantee you gain control of the political. The philosophy of the classroom in this generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next generation. Now, don't have to take my word for it. Yuri Bezmenov, a KGB agent, defected, and he explained the Marxist revolutionary stages of operation for ideological subversion. I don't know if you've heard the word ideological subversion. There's four stages, he said: demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. First stage, demoralization. Educate or indoctrinate an entire generation in Marxist ideology. Destabilize the economy, destabilize foreign relations, cause wars, undermine the defense systems. Create a crisis, suddenly a violent change of power, some change of structure in the economy by something radical. And then you need a period of stability and normalization until the next cycle reaches a crisis point. So you've got to, just like if you think that you are hammering a nail into the wood, you've got the time of relaxation, you pull the hammer back, and then you bring the hammer forward. Now, each time you pull the hammer back, that's not the end of it. The pulling the hammer back and the bringing the hammer down is part of the same process. So you have crisis normalization, and you have a constant back and forth. Others put it this way: two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. You see, when the people start waking up and getting concerned, well, take a step back. They say, oh, yeah, we can go back to sleep, and so on. The highest art of warfare, he said, is not to fight at all, but to subvert anything of value in the country of your enemy, until such time that the perception of reality of your enemy is screwed up to such an extent that he does not perceive you as an enemy. You can take your enemy without a single shot being fired. So this is a KGB agent explaining how active measures works. So demoralization, he says, takes about 15 to 20 years. You've got to break down the religion, the education, the media, and the culture. You put up false heroes, false role models. You monopolize, manipulate, discredit. You focus on non-issues. You get people into a death wish. Promote ignorance, permissiveness, relativity, uninformed myopia, addictive fads and masses. And so you change the structure of law and order. You make law and order about legislature, not a moral issue. So people mistrust justice. I mean, just think now that you can have people who are criminals, who, you know, rape and murder, and they somehow don't get brought to prosecution. But you can have somebody who did some technical infraction, some minor issue, and the law pours a ton of bricks in the head. And it's not balanced. Now, how is it that you've got people out there who are able to steal hundreds of millions of rands in this country? Now, just think of the state capture, think of the corruption, the 500 billion rand COVID relief fund, 500 billion that we were promised for the people whose businesses were being destroyed, their income was being ruined, but don't worry, we're going to compensate. Did that ever get paid? No. It got lost. It got stolen. State capture. Who has ever been brought to account? Who has ever given restitution? Who has ever ended up in prison for all the corruption, theft, stealing, not billions, trillions of rands over the last 30 years. And yet, somehow or another, you can get pulled over for not wearing a seatbelt or for some problem with your tires aren't the right depth or something, and some technical problem, you had a mirror that's not working properly, or, you know, you didn't renew your license or something like this, and they could throw the book at you while other people get away with literally murder, looting, just arson, and all that sort of thing. So law and order becomes more legislature, not moral. And in social relations, it's all about rights of some people, not their obligations. And then you undermine the intelligence, the police, the military, internal politics, all kinds of antagonisms, and foreign, you undermine the society in every way that you can, break up the family. If you want to destroy the family, they're doing a pretty good job. So just think, for example, my wife went to Austria for her school reunion, and of all of her friends in school, she was the only one still married. Some of her friends had never even gotten married, others were divorced. But in Austria, you get paid more for being single and being a single mother. You'll get taxed more if you're in a marriage relationship with children. So some of her school friends were living with their boyfriends and so on, but not getting married because She got more money and paid less taxes for being a single mom, even though she's living with a boyfriend, because she's got a child and she's not married. And so the taxes penalize families for getting married and they reward families for not being married. So what's going to happen? And then I went to Omaha, Nebraska, and there was a large community of Sudanese there. Now, the Sudanese have very strong families in Sudan, and the children are very well behaved. But what did I see in the United States, in Omaha? The children were running around riot, making absolute chaos during the church service, and the women were all dressed like whores. I mean, really, absolutely disgusting behavior and clothing. And the men were explained to me during the mealtime on Sunday, well, the woman very quickly learned in America that if they can divorce their husbands, which there were feminists and so on coming along to explain to them how they would get a lot of money if they had divorced their husbands, and they'll get more money if they have the children in their custody, and the state will pay them for this. And so just about every family broke up. The kids are going to state schools, and they were, you know, in church with their baseball caps reversed around, and the girls often had all kinds of jewelry and makeup and weird, bizarre hairstyles, and the clothing was shocking, and just the whole thing was dysfunctional. These people, just a few years ago, were living intact lives as dedicated Christians and churches in Sudan. And just a few years in America, and they were wrecked. And it was absolutely staggering how the society could be broken up just by moving from Sudan to America. And they were there studying. Like, many of them were there studying to be engineers, doctors, and so on. And so I asked them, so when are you coming back to Sudan? And they just laughed at me, like, are you stupid? We're not going back to Sudan. And I was saying, your country needs you. We need engineers, we need farmers, we need medical doctors and so on. And they were like, you know, we're in the land of plenty, getting all sorts of freebies. And meanwhile, their children are going to hell. Many of them on drugs and all sorts of problems. If you want to wreck your family, you take them to America. That's a quick way of wrecking them, although Britain can do a pretty good job of that too. Australia and Canada can also wreck you. And the amount of people I know, friends who went to Canada said to me a while ago, you know, he said, the shocking thing is you can go to a braai place in South Africa and you've got 40 people who've got 40 opinions. You go to Canada, you have 40 people who have only one opinion. It's a government narrative. He said, the Canadians can't think outside the box. They can't question. Whatever the government is saying on the government-controlled media, that's what the people were repeating to one another. No independent thinking in Canada. I've seen the same in Australia. Absolutely shocking. They can do all of this to break down the people. Of course, junk food's part of it. A sort of enfeebled mass of people. Hatred and alienation, victimization. Nothing's my fault. Everything's someone else's fault. The seven pillars of ignorance. Ideology. Incompetence. Yeah, we know about that. Nepotism. We know all about that. And unaccountability. Laziness. Arrogance. Corruption. As the scripture says, no fornicator, unclean person, or covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. And this is what many societies are being built on, especially in the West right now. And those who promote open borders dramatically increase taxes. No borders, no nations, stop deportations. Well, that's national suicide. Open the borders, why? Destabilize society, escalate crime. They've got millions of illegal aliens pouring into America every year. They've got something like 30 illegal aliens in America, many of which are criminals, many of which are terrorists and drug dealers and human traffickers and so on. And just consider the fact, hell has open borders. Heaven has a strict immigration policy. If you don't have borders, you don't have a nation, actually, at all. I mean, just think, if your home didn't have walls, gates, doors, and anyone could just come in any time, your children couldn't be safe, women wouldn't be safe, none of your property would be safe. Do you really think that's the way to live your life? And welcoming in people who say things like this, freedom, go to hell. That's eloquent. Numbers 33:55. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall be that those who you let remain shall be irritants in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land where you dwell. Well, that is coming true very much in South Africa, in America. Those who promote diversity inevitably sow seeds for great intolerance and violent clashes. How much is too much? You know, you get these people who one earring is not enough. They've got a 15. One tattoo is not enough. The whole body's got to be covered in tattoos, even the whole face. I mean, when is too much too much? And when is too many immigrants too many immigrants? Those people promoting multiculturalism are actually promoting demographic suicide of our host nation. The death of the culture, the death of the people. I mean, just think of during when we had the COVID lockdown lunacy, the salvation by vaccination COVID cult. It was okay to rampage and burn shops, loot shops, smash things to pieces. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. Exodus 23:33. And can't you just feel a tolerance? And this is, of course, somehow enriching your community and your culture. Those people promoting hate speech laws are actually promoting censorship and increased intolerance. Because if you don't like what the person says, you just call it hate speech. I'm offended. And you know, how can you say that? You've committed a thought crime. And get the person thrown off the university campus, get the professor to lose his job, kick out this person, get the pastor kicked out of the pulpit, whatever it is, I don't like it. Get the person deplatformed. And there's so many things I don't like. I don't like blasphemy. I don't like cursing and swearing. I don't like pornography. Well, you've got to put up with that. Shut up. Put up with that. That's free speech. But what you said in that sermon, what you said in that post, that offends the perverts. And therefore, that's got to be taken down. So we've got to tolerate pornography, blasphemy, and foul language. But they're not willing to tolerate the gospel. Not acceptable. And then you've got these cursed fact checkers. We never had fact checkers until the truth started getting out. But the first fact checker was actually Satan. Eve says, well, God said this or the other, and says, no. He fact checked the false information. The most anointed false prophet on the earth today is the lying liberal media, the fake news. It has millions of Christians underneath its influence, and they don't even know it. The amount of people who, well, you know, I saw it on SATV, or I saw it with my own eyes on CNN. You saw it with your own eyes on TV. That's, you know, do you think that Star Wars is a true story? Do you think that there is a planet far, far away, long, long ago, and that, you know, these Star Wars? No, the camera can lie. It's called special effects. They're quite capable of giving a false impression. And the amount of lies that are out there, we shouldn't be surprised. John 8 says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I mean, a lot of people do not know the truth. Many people know the lies, but they don't know the truth. Those who champion centralized governments are promoting inefficiency, wastage, corruption, and oppression. Just think of how every state-operated enterprise organized by the ANC has failed. South African Airways, South African Postal Service, the ESCOM, I mean, great examples. None of it has worked. And our national health insurance is going to work where all the others have failed. And just think of the European Parliament in Strasbourg. I've been there, and it does look like this incomplete Tower of Babel. He who justifies the wicked, he who condemns the just, both of them alike are an abomination to the Lord. Proverbs 17:15. Hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gates. That's what we are commanded to do. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Love and faithfulness go before you. Those promoting defund the police, you see written on the street, defund the police, they're actually encouraging even worse riots, worse looting, worse chaos, and inevitably vigilantism. Because what happens, like you can see in the Cape Flats, many people get fed up when the police don't do their job. Local communities have a quick kangaroo court lynch mob and you know, burnouts or deal with the person who abused the kids or raped the kids and so on. And the vigilantes will sometimes get the wrong person because they no longer have the patience or the trust in the judicial system. They don't trust the police who are corrupt. They don't trust the judicial system to bring justice. So they rather take the risk of getting the wrong person because they are taking the law into their own hands. And of course, taking the law into your own hands is super dangerous, but it's inevitable. Somebody is going to become a vigilante because they are sick and tired of nothing being done by the state. So the failure of the state is going to lead to vigilantism. And if you make an innocent comment like marriage can only be between a man and a woman, this has been construed as hate speech in Canada and has been enough for police investigations, criminal charges in parts of the United States and Australia and parts of Europe as well, where freedom of speech has been beaten to death in the name of tolerance. You've got adoption agencies targeted for preferring to place children for adoption in homes with a husband and a wife, rather than with homosexual living lovers. New Zealand had a big song and a dance over a homosexual couple, one being Asian, the other being New Zealander, adopting some little kid. And it came out later that this front page exhibit A of homosexual love and adoption turned out to be they were abusing this poor child who was being systematically raped, not just by these two homos, but there were selling out people traveling for sex tourism from around the world to New Zealand, where this child was being rented out to perverts from different parts of the world. And that was New Zealand's exhibit A of how homosexuals should be allowed to adopt kids. Well, there's a higher percentage of child abusers amongst the homosexual community than amongst the heterosexual community. And so adoption agencies have traditionally wanted a man and a woman in a marriage relationship as the preferred adoptive parents. Well, those who've gone the other way have, it's all been proven to be very counterproductive. Tolerance is beating freedom of speech to death. A hate crime requires thought police. And this is what we've got now, fact checkers and thought police coming along. You can't say that. I've posted things on Facebook which have been taken down within seconds as the fact checkers said was missing some information or whatever, and, you know, fake news. Well, how can they tell? It didn't even have time to read it yet. Sometimes it was taken down about as fast as I put it up. And then you've got the new hate speech bill, one of the most serious, urgent threats to freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of speech in our history. Especially if you hold the biblical definition of marriage, which is now akin to treason, blasphemy, and apostasy, that you dare suggest that marriage can only be between a man and a woman. And a Christian representative of the University of Cape Town was suspended for expressing biblical beliefs on a personal Facebook page. Quoting a scripture like John 14, verse 6, Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father but by me." This can be construed as ignorant, intolerant, bigoted, judgmental, offensive hate speech. Pro-life comments and scientific reality like life begins at conception, abortion is murder, have been condemned as hate speech by radical liberals in North America, Europe, and Australia, and some poor senior citizens in Britain have been put under inquisitions for not supporting the gay agenda. So where will this all end? How far can it go? Bestiality, polygamy, paedophilia, I mean, what is too much? How much is too far? The answer to that is George Orwell's 1984, where thought police prosecute thought crimes. It's not just what you do now, it's why you do it, or what your motives are, or what your thoughts were behind it. Did you see this video of this poor woman in Britain who was approached by the police and asked, "Were you praying?" And she says, "Why do you ask?" "Because she's standing across the road from an abortion clinic. It's an offense to pray here." "What were you praying about?" And I think she said something like, "I was praying for you and the police on the streets and so on." And they still arrested her. They handcuffed this poor woman because she was praying on the streets of England. You wouldn't have thought prayer could be a thought crime. The bias, the prejudice, the malice being manufactured by secular humanists through Hollywood entertainment. And have you noticed how many Hollywood films these days, well, you probably haven't because we're not even bothering to watch these things anymore, but one woke bomb after another, and they're just coming out with such mindless things, lazy script writing, no longer having decent plots, no longer having interesting character development. No, it's lots of explosions and CGI and woke race swap or gender swap and the girl boss dominating, where it's just not believable. You know, men have to work and fight hard and often lose to become great sword fighters or Jedi warriors and so on. But not if she's a girl boss. I mean, the woman can come in, no training, never fail, no real jeopardy, and they can just wipe the field of everyone else without any real effort and without even training. Just unbelievable. And audiences are switching off, and one after the other, the Hollywood films are just crashing at the box office because people are getting sick of it. Even in the Marvel franchise, even the Star Wars franchise, they're destroying the franchise by violating all the rules of good script writing and good entertainment. But it's more important to brainwash you and to present a woke agenda than it is to produce a good film, it seems now. And talk about the mainstream news media, the secular humor school textbooks, lies, lies, and more lies. increasingly intolerant political legislation is providing a sinister tool chest, an armory for anti-Christian intimidation, harassment and prosecution. This scene comes from when Obama and his court legalized homosexual weddings in America. And as a result, the homosexuals celebrate by having a mock crucifixion of Christ at the gay pride march. This is not just anti-marriage, this is anti-Christ. The goal of cultural Marxism is destroy the family, destroy religion, destroy private property, to destroy the nation. And the family is the basic building block of society. This is cultural Marxism. This is the Frankfurt School. This is the termite strategy. And there's a whole story as well about how the gay mafia has hijacked the Catholic Church. It started back in the 1920s when the communists determined to infiltrate churches. The easiest church to infiltrate was the Methodists. They had no standards. They just walked in and wiped them up. The Catholics were harder. How are you going to get people to infiltrate the Catholic Church? Who wants to infiltrate a church which requires celibacy for the priests and nuns? No problem. They turned to the homosexuals and lesbians, who communist homosexual lesbians from the 1920s targeted the Catholic Church. And now a gay mafia has taken control of the Catholic Church. There's a whole study we've done that's showing that, you know, the sex scandals in the Catholic Church are not sex scandals, they're not church scandals, they're homosexual scandals. And it's communist atheists that infiltrate into the church. This is a double whammy. They get to discredit the Catholic Church, and they get to have a lot of fun too while they're doing this, abusing the choir boys and whatever else is out there. So the gay mafia and the Catholic Church is part of the same infiltration technique. Where the battle rages, there your loyalty is proved. Martin Luther declared, "If I profess with the loudest voice and the clearest exposition every portion of the truth of God's word, except precisely that point which the world and the devil are at that moment attacking, then I'm not confessing Christ, however boldly I might be professing him. For where the battle rages, there the loyalty of the soldiers proved. And to be steady on all the battlefront besides is mere flight and disgrace if he flinches at that point." You can imagine you might be a soldier and you were guarding the quartermaster store and the trumpet raged and you had to gather to this point that's under attack. And you stayed where you were. Well, later on, you can imagine, well, why didn't you come and join the fight? Well, I was faithfully guarding the quartermaster store as I was assigned to. Yes, but didn't you hear the alarm? Didn't you hear the call to come to that point, the wall that's under attack? It's flight and disgrace if you say, well, I'd prefer to serve here where it's safer than over there where I was really needed at that urgent moment. The sex scandals tolerated and covered up for so many years with the Catholic institutions are terrible scandals, but the biggest scandal is what's behind it. The most sexually permissive environment on earth, Hollywood, is awash in even more horrific scandals than the Catholic Church has been too, by the way. Just think of Harvey Weinstein, who produced so many major films, has got so many, what do we call these Academy Awards, these silly golden idols. And the amount of famous stars who testified they had to allow themselves to be sexually abused by Harvey Weinstein, the producer, to get lifted up into the stardom that they got, and it was a trade-off in many cases. And they started to blow the whistle. I mean, some of the most famous films produced, including Mandela Long Walk to Freedom, Weinstein production, disgusting, blasphemous, filthy, foul-mouthed pagan, Harvey Weinstein. And then people are shocked. I mean, he produces vile, perverted, sick films, and then people are shocked to find he's a vile, perverted, sick person. I mean, who would have imagined? And, of course, a friend of some of the most powerful people in America. And, yes, I mean, think no further. And, of course, we've got the Bill Cosby, who turned out to be a serial rapist as well, even though he was the exhibit A of the humanist man who could solve every problem, have an intact family without any reference to God. It's not just Harvey Weinstein. There's an entire subculture of pedophilia, rape, abuse throughout the whole of Hollywood, and some of the most famous stars involved in Epstein's Island and Weinstein's pedophilia, abuse of female stars and so on. The Catholic Church has been hijacked by homosexuals. And the situation is now similar to anti-Christian Inquisition of the Middle Ages. Contrary to public perceptions, the Inquisition was not a group of Christians mercilessly persecuting unbelievers. The Inquisition was the exact opposite. If you read the court records of the inquisitors, such as in Fox's Book of Martyrs, it becomes clear the inquisitors were by no means Christians at all. Pagans had hijacked the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages, and they vindictively condemned to death Christians who believed the Bible, who translated the Bible, or were taught the Holy Scriptures. And they would ask simple questions, you know, about them. And if they found that they rejected transubstantiation, or if they confessed that they translated the Bible into common language, that would be enough to have them condemned to death. Many a time, the inquisitors tossed the Bible into the flames with their victim to be burned with the martyrs, just showing their contempt for the Word of God. No real Christian would do that. If you've read Fox's Book of Martyrs, of the cruel persecutions endured by the Waldensians, the Huguenots, other Protestant reformers, you know the Inquisition was anti-Christian. There was nothing Christian about the Inquisition. So it's not the church abusing the pagans, it's the pagans who hijacked the church abusing the Christians. And the Inquisition occurred at a time of blatant corruption. The priesthoods, the bishoprics, even the papal seats were open for sale. They were bought and sold to the highest bidder. Many ungodly men dominated all levels of the leadership of the medieval Catholic Church. Far from the Inquisition being Christians persecuting non-Christians, the reality is it was the very opposite, which is what's going on today as well. Like Queen Jane, the 11-day queen, beheaded by order of her cousin, Bloody Mary, because she would not renounce her Protestant faith. She was offered her life if she would just renounce the Protestant faith and embrace Catholicism, but she wouldn't do it, and she's beheaded by her cousin. The Inquisition was an anti-Christian persecution of Protestant believers, and this is now going on today. The Catholic Church is abusing kids, and it's a homosexual scandal, not a church scandal, whereas the Roman Catholic Church is not a real church. I use the word church with a small c when you talk about Catholicism. The predominantly male-on-male crime is with teens between 14 and 17 years old. They are the victims. And so the Catholic thing is, while many cardinals of the Catholic Church are treating a crisis as a public relations problem, it's a problem with criminality. The homosexual element of the abuse scandal is being ignored in so many cases. It's not a church scandal, it's a homosexual problem. And yet you've got homosexual writers blaming the church for the scandals, but this is a homosexual scandal, and it's also a communist strategy to infiltrate and neutralize these churches. And Benedict XVI prohibited declaring homosexual men to be admitted to the seminary. But Pope Benedict saw the homosexual problem was a problem, and he got pushed out pretty quickly for this. Pope Francis is very pro-homosexual. The same people who continue to put increasing pressure on churches to accept homosexuals for ordination and legalize homosexual marriages are the same people who scream abuse when many of these very people they've been campaigning for turn out to abuse the young boys entrusted to their care. Just like what they're doing with the Scouts. The Scouts in America, by the way, they've just changed the name from Boy Scouts of America to Scouting in America, because they're admitting girls, they're admitting transgenders, they're admitting pedophiles as well as Scoutmasters. You know, what a wonderful amount of victims they've got there when you've got a pedophile allowed to be a Scoutmaster. And what do you think is going to happen from here? Just insane. Pope Francis, the Quran and the Holy Bible are the same. Jesus, Muhammad, Jehovah, Allah, we're all children of God, regardless of the name we choose to address him by. I mean, how on earth is this even sensible? It doesn't matter. God made you like this, he says to homosexuals. The so-called Pope Francis, in the past we used to say, is the Pope Catholic? Well, that used to be an obvious question. And yet now the Pope is not Catholic. Now he says God made you gay. And who am I to judge about the gays? Well, he's promoting them. Therefore, God gave them up to uncleanness, the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies amongst themselves. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. And so the gay GB mafia is protecting the predator priests in the Catholic Church. 30% of Catholic priests in America have homosexual orientations, and amongst bishops, it is as high as 50 to 60%. So the higher you go in the Catholic Church, the higher the percentage of homosexuals. And this is part of the communist strategy of Antonio Gramsci to infiltrate the Catholic, or all the churches, with homosexuals and communists. We have to focus on what is the cause of these children, young children, seminarians, continually being abused by predatory priests, and this is what we have to stop. One of the ways of doing this is the disciplining and the firing of bishops who have been protecting these pedophiles for decades. The homosexual network protects and promotes its own. That's what's caused this continuous cycle of abuse in the seminaries, in the rectories, in the sanctuaries, and in the schools. People are justifiably terribly angry that people sat on this information, no action was taken. Priests were put back into circulation, but this is now a day of reckoning for the so-called Catholic Church. Gay is welcome. Can you do that? Is the Pope Catholic? Who am I to judge? They all knew. All of them knew. There's been noticed the inappropriateness of the Vatican hosting hundreds of children and young people in Rome to discuss youth, faith, and vocation with the bishops. And this is amongst some of the most homosexual-dominated, paedophile-dominated institutions in the world. We have not even resolved this problem, and we are going to be exploiting children at the Synod on Youth, all to expand the teaching of the Church with respect to homosexuality. Pope Francis is imploding the Catholic Church. He is doing to the Vatican what Biden is doing to America. Catholics for LGBTQ equality, really. This is what is up. It has to be stopped. It's a danger to the children. It's a danger to the Church. It's a danger to the faith. Therefore, God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. It's an ugly thing that's going on. And to think this is happening in a church, although it's an apostate church, but still, most people can't tell the difference between a real church and an apostate church. They changed the truth of God for a lie. God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even the women exchanged natural relations with unnatural ones. I couldn't believe walking around London recently, the amount of people in London who've got full tattoos over their faces, their arms, and I thought, London, which used to be the capital of Christian civilization, sending out missionaries around the world, and now they look like the pagans on the Pacific Islands and the cannibals that Charles Darwin was documenting back in the 1800s. And just staggering. In the same way, the men abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men, and they received in themselves the due penalty for their perversion. And people are parading themselves like this on the streets of London. Although they knew God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continued to do these very things, they also proved those who practiced them. Aristotle wrote 2,400 years ago, tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society. The last things that you believe in a dying society is tolerance and apathy, tolerance of evil, apathy. What one generation tolerates, the next generation will embrace, or should we say celebrate, said John Wesley, and it's true. Toleration is a device being used to introduce a new law system as a prelude to a new intolerance. When I was growing up, the liberals were saying censorship is wrong, we should be tolerant. But the moment they gained control of society, suddenly they wanted censorship again, and anyone who disagreed with them was to be censored. God hates sin. There are six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, pride is first, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who lies, the one who sows discord amongst his brethren. Proverbs 6, God hates sin. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then. Do not allow yourselves to be burdened again with the yoke of slavery. You, my brothers, were called to be free. Do not use your freedom to indulge a sinful nature, but rather serve one another. We've got to protect our children from this LGBTQ perversion. People who believe men cannot become women should be sent to Soviet-era labor camps for re-education, according to Goldsmiths University's LGBTQ plus society. The student group used Twitter to claim gulags had a positive role in changing the minds of Stalin's opponents. And estimates of people who died in the camps between 1910 and 1950s runs into tens of millions. Over 50 million, they believe, died in the Gulag concentration camps under Joseph Stalin, Lenin, and Brezhnev, Khrushchev, and the others. So Goldsmiths University's LGBTQ plus says any opponents of the movement should be sent to the Gulag. Gulag was the acronym for Main Administration of Corrective Labor Camps. They then sought to clarify what a gulag was, saying the system sought to correct and change people's ways. So LGBTQ people of today in America are saying we should send Christians to the gulags, and that the gulags did a lot of good, and it corrected and changed people's thinking. Long story short, friends, they conclude the ideas of anti-trans bigots literally need to be killed and must be eradicated through re-education. That's what the communists called the camps, re-education camps. And so you've got people around today saying that we need to literally kill the ideas of anti-trans bigots. The Soviet gulags saw 50 million people incarcerated, working as slaves 14 hours a day in extreme weather conditions, like down to minus 40 degrees. Tens of millions of people died hideous deaths in the gulags. And you've got intellectuals in America saying this would be a good idea for the Christians of today who are anti-trans. An editorial in Daily Telegraph said students were rewriting history, while a paper's news article said students should be derided for being blind to reality. And they are so insulting of anyone who disagrees with them. Civilization itself is at stake. At its heart, the battle to redefine marriage, to incorporate what God in the Bible condemns as perversion and abomination. This is a war against the family. It's a basic building block of society. It's not only a battle for the family, it's a battle for civilization itself. Of the 26 civilizations that are recorded in history, none survived the public toleration of homosexual perversion. Whether you're talking about the great Roman and Greek civilizations, they collapsed when sexual morality was subverted. Homosexual perversion represents a terminal stage of the collapse of any civilization. That's true for the Greeks, and you see the ruins all over. It's true for the Romans, and you see the ruins of that empire. It's true for the Mayans and the Aztecs and the Incas, and you can see the ruins today of what used to be great civilizations, absolutely destroyed once homosexual perversion was tolerated. And these ruins stand, the stones cry out. This is insane. None of these civilizations, the Incas, none of them survived tolerating homosexual perversion. That was the terminal stage of their civilizations. And now you can see the ruins. Similarly, you can see in the collapse of the Aztecs, the Mayan, the Inca civilizations, the role of sexual perversion, which included ripping out beating hearts and throwing women down long wells and so on. And multiculturalism is a philosophy of self-destruction. God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. We went through this verse, and here it is again. It would still be wrong, even if the government was to legalize all these things, because God's word condemns it. Just as God used persecution to both purify and revive the church in countries where Christianity is illegal, so God will use this issue of homosexual activism and state bullying to purify his church in the West. So in one sense, we can see this is a good sifting of the church. Those who refuse to bow or bend to Caesar's demands will, like Daniel and his friends, shine like the brightness of the firmament. And those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. We need to stand against sin, and we need to rise up against evildoers. Stand for the Lord against the works of iniquity. To be right with God has often meant to be in trouble with men. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. And we've made a stand, marching to Parliament, to protect the sanctity of marriage. One man and one woman for life is marriage. All that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. We must love our neighbor, and that means we've got to reach out to our homosexual neighbors with Christian love and concern, sharing the liberating gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ with them. I've led several homosexuals to Christ and several lesbians to Christ, and I must say, they were thrilled to be free. It's not unloving to share the gospel with your neighbors, but it's against the law in Britain. Conversion therapy, where you change a person's orientation from homosexuality to anything else, is against the law. But we cannot submit to this counterfeit marriage movement, this falsehood. We can't stand by while our children are subjected to brainwashing, who are being bullied to declare good and normal what God has condemned as sinful and perverse. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil. Woe to those who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Woe to those who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to ministers of the gospel who are turning themselves into promoters of perversion. So if you're at the First Church of Honesty, you might have something rock concert, followed by someone's opinion and a poor exegesis. This is more than a battle over marriage. It's a battle for the family. It's a battle for religious freedom. It's a battle for Christian civilization. More than that, it's part of the New World Order's war against God. This is actually a war against God. Freedom has set us free. Do you know that there was a family conference set up by Russia in the Kremlin where they celebrated families, and there were over 100 countries represented, and it was about pro-life, pro-family, reviving the Christian roots of Europe. Can you imagine the Kremlin, which used to be the heartland of atheism, is now championing bringing people back to the Bible, back to putting Bibles in the hotel rooms, chaplains in the army, and this is the flag they designed for this, of representing man and woman with three children. And this is the straight pride flag, they call it. Russia's answer to gay marriage. And you can see people in Russia protesting against the gay agenda. And even in France, I don't know if you knew that there's still people with backbone in France. 1 million people gathered in Paris to protest the state's legalization of homosexual marriage in Paris. Gives you a bit of hope. There is resistance out there. Not everyone is insane. And so our book, Rise of the Gay GB, Pink Inquisition, and the Audacity film by Ray Comfort, these are tools that can be used to try and win homosexuals to Christ and protect our children from the gay GB and the pink agenda. I've got copies of a newsletter I wrote on the Rise of the Gay GB and the Pink Inquisition. Please help yourself. It's on the table by the top of the stairs. And another related one is the book Taryn produced on Porndemic, How the Pornography Plague Affects You and What You Can Do About It. Pornography and the gay agenda are very much intertwined, and it's disturbing how many people get sucked into porn, and these days it's even kids in primary school with their phones and so on. And that often takes people from porn also into the homosexual and transsexual agenda. So these are weapons that have been designed to help protect families in the protection of the faith, the family, and our future. Charles Spurgeon once said, concerning homosexuality, this once brought hell out of heaven on Sodom. Avoid hell, repent, trust Jesus today. Those are the kind of billboards we need. Scripture abandoned in the culture leads to relative morality, hopelessness, and meaninglessness. You came from nothing, you're going nowhere, life is meaningless. No wonder people commit suicide. But to give you some encouragement, these are some of the people we mobilized in the march to Parliament to protest against Mandela's and Ramaphosa's plans to paganize this country. Grondwet op Kortsewet, constitution based upon God's law. We made a stand, we filled Cape Town, tens of thousands of people marched, and we filled Cape Town. We were solid from the castle to Parliament, all the way along Adderley Street, Strand Street, and just to show you the amount of opposition to this government's paganization, and that was back in 1995. And you wonder, where are all these people now? What happened and what did they vote? And how is it that our society has put up with so much paganization? There was such a horror in 1995. They're trying to legalize abortion, pornography. They've got to get in the streets and protest it. Now we have trouble to mobilize a few people for a protest at a life change. But there was huge outrage at the beginning, and people rallied under the banner back to the Bible. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And we need to get back to the Bible. This man, just to the side of me, was sent from the president's office to summon me to meet Mandela on the Thursday. We marched on Tuesday. On the Thursday, I met with Mandela, who tried to persuade me that what they were doing was for the good of the country and so on. Well, God's word gives us the guidance. Philippians 4 verse 8. Whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. These are the standards for entertainment, news media, religious institutions, and education as well. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will heal their land. If we want God to heal our land, he says we need to humble ourselves, pray, seek his face, and turn from our wicked ways first. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? This is why we must smash cultural Marxism, which includes the Frankfurt School, Gramsci strategy, Termite strategy, which I think now we can all understand why things are happening like they are. These kind of presentations you'll find under frontlinemissionsa.org, and we've got a video and audio gallery under resources, drop down menu that you can find them. And this is also on our web, but we've got hard copies at the top of the stays at the table as well.